Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a profitable servant when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. They've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and in our moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right, an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it works automatically, just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it? All right, we've been talking about this thing of a profitable servant. Last time I told you about a couple of my old-timey employees, a couple of guys that worked hard for me, and then I paid them very well. I paid them more than they were going to make working for any other contractor. I took care of them because the employee and the servant, or excuse me, the employer and the servant, which in olden times was called a bond servant, have a symbiotic relationship. You know, it takes one hand to wash the other hand, and it takes the employee working for the master. In the same way that it takes a sailor working on the ship, working for the captain, to make a successful voyage. And I pointed out to you that in more recent times, the last 75, 80 years, we Americans have created an animosity between capital and labor, between management and the worker. And now we have this attitude of, I'm not going to work, and we're not going to pay. It's a crazy concept, and it's a preposterous proposal, but that's where we're at. And so people go to work, and they don't like their employer, they don't like their boss, they don't want to work, they don't want to be here, they hate it. And then, of course, the management sitting there on the other side and saying, well, we don't want to pay this guy, and we just can't wait until we can give him a pink slip and send him out the door. And so productivity has gone to hell in a handbasket, and as a result of that, our jobs have been outsourced to people that do want to work. Today, you know, if you want somebody to work, you got to hire a Mexican. Americans don't want to work. Americans don't want to get their hands dirty. That's the bottom line. And so as a result of that, now we have this thing called the Great Depression. And with the Great Depression, now we have unemployment. Now, nobody or no country ever goes through 100% unemployment. The highest numbers that I've ever seen in unemployment circles just happened in Argentina in 2002, 3, and 4, with 62% is where it peaked out, 62% unemployment. I guess maybe there have been places that got worse than that, but moral of the story is that that's very, very rare. We're expecting 40% unemployment here in the United States, about 15 percentage points higher than the last time in the 1930s. So I've been pointing out, and I said I'd point out to you how to hire yourself a job here in the seventh program, the last program in the series, how to hire yourself a job. Now, I learned this from my Uncle Lyle, so listen up and let me explain it to you. Back in the last Depression, my Uncle Lyle is unemployed. He needs a job. And there's a big mill called Pacific Lumber Company in Scotia, California. And so he said, well, I think I'll go down to Scotia and see if I can't rustle up a job down there. So he goes down there, and the first thing he said that he saw was about 100 guys lined up going into the office to write up their applications. Now, this mill had about 600 employees. It was a big mill, 600 employees. Now, every day, somebody is going to quit. You know, in an operation that size, somebody's going to quit, and they have to be replaced. Somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to be sick. You know, there's going to be somebody's going to retire. You know, whatever's going to happen. Somebody's going to get fired. Now, I don't know what their turnover was daily, but I would imagine it was 2-3 guys a day, every day. Now, there's 300 working days in a year, so that means that their workforce of 600 people is going to be turned over once or twice a year. You know, not everybody, but on average. Now, there were people that had worked there for 20, 30 years and were probably going to die there, but there were people that had worked there for a week or 10 days and got tired of it and quit. Now, remember, this is during the 1930s. This is about 1933 or 4 or 5, long in there. And the mill isn't really hiring, but they've got all these people that want to work there. So there's 100 people a day lining up and putting in their applications. Well, 100 people a day times 300 days is 30,000 a year, isn't it? And so here's thousands of people lining up to get jobs, but there's only about 5 jobs a day. So Uncle Lyle looks at that and says, that is not the place to get a job. Think of it pragmatically. If I line up here, it could take me 2 or 3 days to even get to the head of the line to put in my application. And what's my application going to say? I'm a mill worker. I've got lots of experience. I'm a good guy, and you ought to hire me. Now, if you're a personnel manager and you've got hundreds of these applications, you know, I'm 35 years old, I'm a hell of a nice guy, I'm a mill worker, and I'm well experienced. Okay, well, who are you going to pick from? You know, you've got to be somebody that stands out. You've got to be the guy that can be recognized. So my Uncle Lyle didn't even get in line. He just walked right out into the mill yard, and he walks up to a guy, and he says, who is the boss here? And so the guy told him, well, it's Ben Johnson. And Ben Johnson, that's that guy over there. So he walks right up to Ben Johnson, and he says, my name is Lyle Stanley, and I've just been sent out from the office. They told me to look for Ben Johnson, and I asked that guy over there. He says, you're him. So what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? And the boss said, this is Ben Johnson, he says, well, I didn't call for anybody. And he said, well, that's where they told me to come. And here I am. And I'm ready to work. What do you want? So he says, well, you see that pile of lumber over there that fell over? Straighten up that pile. Now, a unit of lumber that falls over has about 3,000 to 3,500 board feet in it. And it takes about, you know, the average Joe six-pack, if he was going to pick up a unit of lumber and restack it, probably 30 to 45 minutes. Now, if you got after it, you know, you could stack that pile of lumber probably in 20 minutes. I mean, you know, if you really just got right down there and started moving boards. Now, an employee, an experienced mill worker who's used to stacking boards, would look at that, and he'd probably take the full 45 minutes. I mean, he'd work, you know, but he's, you know, he's going to not just necessarily take his time, but, you know, he's just going to do the job, and it's about a 40-minute job, and that's what he's going to take to do it. Now, if he were to hustle, if he was in a hurry for some reason, he could probably do it in 20 minutes. My Uncle Lyle goes over there, he hustles, and in 20 minutes he's got it done. He goes back to the boss, he says, okay, I'm done with that, what's next? This is an important aspect. Most guys, when they finish a job, they'll just stand there and wait for the boss to come over and tell him what to do next. Uncle Lyle, he can see what needs to be done, he's not hiding. He goes over to the boss. He says, okay, done. What do you want me to do? He says, okay, take that pile of lumber that you just stacked from those blocks on the left to those blocks on the right. Now take it on the blocks from the right and restack it on the blocks to the left. My Uncle Al goes over there. 20 minutes later, he's restacked the whole pile of boards onto the chocks on the left. Goes back to the boss, says, what's next? He says, take those, that same unit of lumber and stack it on the blocks to the right. He does, and then every time he does it, he's just working his hind end off. I mean, after the second, he restacked the same pile of boards all day long. That's all he did. His first day on the job, he took a unit of lumber, and he stacked it and restacked it and restacked it and restacked it and restacked it three times an hour for, I don't know how many hours a day. I imagine it was 8 hours by that time or 10 hours, something like that. And then I was just a kid when he was telling me this story, and I said, well, why did he do that? Well, I wouldn't do that. I would have told him to take this job and shove it. And my Uncle Lyle said to me, why? Well, because it was stupid, I said, because you'd already stacked the pile of lumber once, and then to do it twice, that's dumb. And he said, what was dumb about it? I said, well, because you wanted to stack a pile of lumber, and so you stacked it. My Uncle Lyle pressed, and he said, but why is that dumb if he wants me to restack that pile of lumber 10, 15 times a day? So after a long pregnant pause, I said, well, because wasn't there anything else to do? He said, I don't know. But what difference would it make to me whether there was something else to do or there wasn't? And I said, well, why'd you do that? And he said, when a man hires out, he's selling his labor. He goes to an employer and he says, I have 8 hours of labor and I want to sell that to you. What difference does it make what he does with the labor that he bought? Right? Now, there's an important point here. Let's suppose that you came into my store and you bought a carburetor. And you took the carburetor out on the sidewalk and took a sledgehammer and smashed it to smithereens. And then you come back into my store and you say, that carburetor that you sold me didn't work. Sell me another one. So I sell you a second carburet. And you take it out on the sidewalk, you take your sledgehammer and you smash it to smithereens. And you come back into my store. And you say, that carburetor didn't work any better than the first one. Give me another one. And I sell you a third one. And a fourth one. And a 19th and a 20th and a 25th one. Why would I say to you, sir, why are you taking those carburetors out on the sidewalk and smashing them to smithereens? What the hell difference does it make to me what you do with your carburetor when you walk out of my store? When I take your money and I sell you a carburetor, that's your carburetor. If you want to smash it to smithereens, that's your business in life. Well, boys and girls, when somebody hires your labor, they're buying your labor. When they've hired you, they have bought your time. What the hell difference does it make to you what your master does with your time after he's agreed to buy it? Your job is to perform the labor. My Uncle Lyle did. Now, he worked there for 2 weeks. They used to pay every 2 weeks in those days. And they paid in cash. So when it come payday, now my Uncle Lyle has never been to the office. There's nothing in writing. Nobody's ever hired him. He went out into the yard, said they sent me out from the office. Now my Uncle Lyle in 2 weeks has established himself as the number one worker on that crew. Ben Johnson has one man, Lyle Stanley, who is without a doubt the number one worker. Now, Ben Johnson thinks he's been through the office and he's signed up. My Uncle Lyle knows he hasn't. So now, when it comes time for payday, my Uncle Lyle gets in line like everybody else. And as they come through the line, he says, Stanley, S-T-A-N-D-L-E-Y. And the paymaster looks it up alphabetically, S, Stanley, and says, why, we don't have a check here. Well, check, we don't have a pay envelope for you. And so my Uncle Lyle said, well, okay, I'll tell my boss, and then he can come in and tell you on Monday. Now, this is Saturday night. In those days, they work 6 days a week. So Monday morning, my Uncle Lyle goes up to Ben, and he says, hey, Ben, I went over to get my pay envelope, and they don't have a pay envelope for me. So something isn't quite right there. Could you take care of that for me? So Ben goes over to the office and he says, hey, the best man on my crew, the number one worker, didn't get paid. And they looked it up and they said, well, we don't have any record of a Lyle Stanley working here. When did he hire on? Well, he hired on here 2 weeks ago. Well, with all these hundreds of people coming through here, nobody can remember. Well, his application must have got lost or something. And so the boss says, hey, give me an application. He goes out, hands it to my Uncle Lyle, says, fill this out. They lost your application. Nobody knew what happened to it. Hell, they didn't lose it. He never filled one out. He never gave anybody a resume. He went out and went to work. He didn't go there to fill out papers. He went there to stack boards. And he did it. He wasn't there to be evaluated, he was there to perform, and he performed. And so now the boss is sitting there saying, hell, this is the best guy on the crew. I got 10 or 15 guys working out here. That guy outworks every single one of them. He's number one. Hell, I don't want to lose him. So now my Uncle Lyle has the boss filling out his application, taking it in, and they paid him for the 2 weeks. That's what you call hiring yourself a job. Just like I told you last time, Jess Sears, not quite that way. He just walked up on a construction site where I was working with another one of my mechanics. And at the time, I only had one other guy working. I was working by myself with one mechanic. Just two guys out here working, remodeling houses. Now, you can do that. You carpenters and plumbers and electricians, all of you tradesmen out there, hell, all of you guys are skilled. and you're waiting around here for some guy to hire you out of the union hall, hell, that ain't going to happen. You're standing in line like all the rest of the herd over here. How are they going to pick you out? So last time I told you, Jess Sears walked up and he said, hey, struck up a conversation with me, asked me if I was a painter. I told him, hell no, I'm a mechanic. I'm not a painter, I'm a plumber. But I'm painting because I have to paint. I wasn't looking for a painter until this guy showed me that this guy could paint. When he said, I can paint that dormer in an hour and a half, 2 hours if I'm a little slow, and I'll paint all four of those dormers for $40. Hell, I already had $40 in the first and wasn't done yet. And when he finished that job, like my Uncle Lyle, at the end of the day, there wasn't any way in hell I was going to let that guy get away from me. But you got to get out there and show somebody what the hell you can do. And when you show them, if you're just an average Joe six-pack and stacking a pile of boards in 45 minutes, hell, anybody can stack a pile of boards in 45 minutes. Can you stack a pile of boards in 20 minutes? That takes some hustling. Can you stack the same pile of boards 15 or 20 times in a day and do it every 20 minutes? And demonstrate that there isn't anybody on this crew that can outwork me. Now you see, with this problem with labor management, this bad atmosphere, the laborer goes out there and his attitude is, I'm going to do just as little as possible. I hate this company. I hate this manager. You got that backward, Bob. The boss over here, the captain of the ship, he's not your enemy. He's your benefactor. And if you come out here and instead of being his competitor, instead of being his enemy, if you show him that you're loyal, if you show him that you're his friend, and that he's your friend, and he is working for you to make you money, there isn't any boss out there, there isn't any company, there isn't any employer out there that doesn't want an employee that makes him money. Jess Sears worked for me for years, and I don't think we ever worked on a job that Jess Sears did not make me money. Jim Honey always made me money. Why, you couldn't get those two guys away from me on a bet. Did I pay them well? I paid those guys piece rate. I paid those guys more than they could make anywhere else. Now let me give you another example here. I'm running the Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and we have an operation here called deck and risers. And three guys are making deck and risers. Three normal, everyday garden variety herd members. And it costs about $18 per deck and riser to make these deck and risers. It's a necessary component to a waterbed. It's kind of like milk in a grocery store. It's a fair trade item. We don't make anything on them, but we have to have it because everybody expects it. So I'm not making my full Keystone markup. I need to be making these things sell for $24 wholesale. I need to be making them for $12. And I'm not. They're costing me $18. Now I'm making $6 off of them, but that's not. I've got 5,000 square feet. Tools and equipment, all invested here in making these deck and risers that don't make me very much money. I would rather be making something that makes money. Now, I had a 30,000 square foot plant and 30 people working here. Three of the plant, 10% of my employees, and at least 10% of my tools and equipment and output is being made to make a small portion. I don't know what portion that is. There's a deck and riser goes out of there with every waterbed, but I don't have the exact numbers on the top of my head. But here's 10% of my employees producing a smaller part of my overall product line. And so a guy came in to me one day and he says, hey, I'd like to sell you deck and risers for $24 each. Then I can supply all that you want and all that you need. Now, if I do this, I can take that 5,000 square feet and convert that to something more profitable. So I announced to these three guys that was my intention, that I'm going to close out deck and risers and that I'm going to convert that part of the plant to doing something else, and I'll just buy them from this guy and trade dollars. In other words, I'll call him up and say, deliver me 100 deck and risers, and write him a check when he delivers the goods and load them on my truck and go deliver them. I won't make anything off of them. I'll have what I have to have. It's a fair trade item, and I'll be making money on something else. These three guys now are faced with unemployment, aren't they? They're being told in advance over here, you need to find employment someplace else because we're going to go from 30 employees to 27. And then I'm going to take that space over there and do something else with it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but we're not going to make deck and risers. So they come to me and they say, oh, Mr. Gordon, oh, please, we'll work harder, we'll do more. And they ask me, you know, why are you doing this? And I said, well, because you guys can't produce. You guys, you know, you're smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and just normal guys, just doing their job. They were just members of the herd, members of the pack, doing what everybody else does, but there wasn't anything about them that was outstanding, and they weren't making a profit. They're making a little profit. They weren't losing money, but not doing anything outstanding. And so I said, I'm just going to eliminate the operation. And that's what all of you are faced with right now. General Motors is simply saying, we're losing market share. We're just going to close down this factory in Fremont, California. Well, what about the 3,000 people that work there? We don't care. It doesn't make money, so we're going to close it down. And so the three guys beseeched me and said, we'll work harder. We'll do what you tell us, blah, blah, blah. Now, I told them that these deck and risers have to be made for $12 each in order to make it competitive, to make it profitable. And so they said, well, we'll do this and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. You guys obviously can't do it because you haven't done it yet. So let me show you. Now, Rick Hosvite and I, when we went in there, we could make deck and risers, just the two of us, for $12 a piece. These three guys could not meet that production, couldn't meet that level of production. They were not profitable servants. So I said, tell you what I'll do. I will take this section of the plant, and I will privatize it. I will contract with you. In other words, if I'm going to contract with this other guy over here, I will contract with you. So I set them up with a line of credit at Boise Cascade, and I guaranteed their credit. They didn't have any. And then I installed certain procedural methods to guarantee that they weren't ripping me off and stealing from me So we had to have some bookkeeping safeguards put in place. And so I said, I will lease you the tools and equipment. I will rent you, sublease this 5,000 square feet to you here. And I wrote up the contract, and I put them to work, and I showed them how to do the job. And so we went to work on it. And very shortly, these three guys running their own business now, see, they've got the Ajax Deck and Riser Company, independent contractors. When they finish up with the deck and risers, all I'm going to do is write them a check. See how that works? Now they're working on piece rate. Remember I told you piece rate's the way to go. These guys never did get it down to 12, but they had it down to about $13 per deck and riser, which was acceptable. And they'd done a pretty good job at it. Now, these guys were making $6 an hour. Now, all of a sudden, they've doubled their productivity. They have doubled what they're putting out, cut their cost of goods sold to a level now that they're making $12 an hour. I mean, these guys, just like I told you, hauling hay. When I was hauling hay for a nickel a bale, hell, I'm making $25 a day hauling hay between milkings, for which I'm getting paid $10 a day. My pay has gone up astronomically. Tony Nunes looks at this and says, oh, my God, how can this be? The end of the world is coming. That's what productivity is all about, kids. I'm telling you. That's the Ten Commandment model. Let's get off our dead hind ends and let's go to work. And when you do that, you're making money for the boss. Let me tell you, when you're making money for the boss, he's going to keep you. Now, all of a sudden, I looked at my deck and riser operation, and I said, now, I don't mind paying these guys $12 an hour. Now, I'm really not paying them by the hour. I'm paying them by the deck and riser. We're contracting now, remember? But their rate of pay, like mine, hauling hay, has doubled. Now, the rest of my employees, the other 27 guys in the factory, are looking at this experiment over here on this 5,000 square feet, and now they begin to beseech me and say, Mr. Gordon, we'd like to work piece rate just like they are. They're making twice as much money. We'd like to do that, too. Now, that was 1981, the last big recession. And so I decided that I was going to get out of the manufacturing business. I'd had it with the government. And so I closed the plant down. And all of those guys ended up unemployed. Not because our operation wasn't profitable, but because of the government's intervention in my business. And I just woke up one day and said, I'm not going to do this anymore. So the government's intervention in the businesses of America have driven our businesses out of America and over to China. Why have they done that? Because they're buying votes from the workers who believe that the Communist Manifesto is the plan that has made America great. That's not true. It was the Ten Commandment model that made America great. It was the Ten Commandment model that made all of the money that we're enjoying, all of the standard of living. But then they imposed the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto upon us and told us that this is the plan that has made you wealthy and rich, and now we need more of it. Well, okay, boys and girls, but I told you, what I'm going to do is step off here to the side and watch all the rest of you people go out and cut a fat hog in the back. I don't think that that's going to happen. Now, I tested this communist crap for years and years, and it didn't work for little Georgie Gordon. And I don't think that it's going to work for you, but I wouldn't tell you not to do it. Get out there and get after it. I'm going to go do something more intelligent. And I'll tell you what that is right after we come back from our break here. At the halfway point, I have to tell you this information here to make everybody around the world happy with the government agencies. So we have to tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use in this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a profitable servant. Now, with millions of people being laid off, we actually need a renaissance. We need a rebuilding of our economy. As many people as want to can work. Now, you may not be able to hire yourself a job or find yourself a job, but listen, there's business out there, and I told you this week, numerous examples, guys like Pat Connolly, who came in and sold a job to me on printing. Now, every business out there needs work done. Now, I teach a business school. Let me just tell you a little bit about the business school. And in my business school, there are certain principles of business that, as an old man, I have learned over the years. Just common sense things, like never risk more than you can afford to lose. That's business. So, a little businessman is just you working all by yourself. That's where you start your business. You were working for wages. You know, you were a cement finisher, and you were working for wages. And you're still a cement finisher, but there's no construction going on. So what do you do to use your skill as a cement finisher to make money, to make your living? And I can tell you how to do that in our business school, how to go out and start your own little independent business, little cement finishing company, or carpentry company, or plumbing company, or whatever you want, whatever it is you do. I don't care what it is. Whatever your skills and your skill level is, it's in demand for somebody, someplace, at some price, and you have to go out and sell that. And in order for you to learn how to do that, you probably need a little guidance. You know, somebody needs to say, okay, now in business, here's what we do. And a little better than that, here's how we do private business. Just a little cash business out here, working for Bessie Baumwortel and the Joe Sixpack, and so can you do that? I can do it. You can do it. Everybody can do it, and that's what we should be doing. It would be better for us if we had millions of Americans as little small entrepreneurs than to have millions of Americans working for big corporations. It would just be better for all of us. But you know, we went down that primrose path, and we said, well, I'm gonna take the pearl of great price, and I'm gonna go to work for ExxonMobil or Walmart. Well, okay. But when business contracts, those guys let people go by the thousands, and then those thousands need just one job at a time. And there's a logical methodology for going out into the marketplace and selling one job at a time. And old Henry Kaiser summed it up very neatly when he said, find a need and fill it. Jess Sears was driving down the street, and he saw a need. And he came up to me and said, I can fill your need, Mr. Gordon. Let me do that. And when I saw him fill my need, I said, Mr. Sears, I want to keep you working for me as long as I can. A guy that can paint like you paint, a guy that works like you work, I can sell that. Let me go out and sell your skills. Now, that's what employers do. They go out and sell your skills. But in order for me to sell your skills, you've got to work. And Americans don't want to work. No, you're going to have to change your modus operandi here, Bob. That's all. You've got to get off your dead ass and go to work. You're going to have to move them boards in 20 minutes instead of 45. That's all. You're going to have to make those deck and risers for $12 each instead of $18. That's all. And I can do it, and others can do it, and you can do it. Now, here's an example. I had a student come in here one time, and he was broke. I don't know what happened to him that he ended up broke, but, you know, things happen. And he's in Walnut Creek, California. Now, in the old days, they used to have a restaurant chain called Sambo's Restaurants. And he went into a Sambo's restaurant, and he told the manager there, he said, "I'm hungry, and I don't want to steal, and I need work, and I don't have it." And he said, "I just looked at your windows, and I see that your windows are dirty. And I would wash all of your windows in this restaurant, inside and out, if you would give me one meal." Now, that's a pretty good offer. And the manager, looking at the guy, you know, sometimes you just look at a guy and say, "Why don't you just go away? I've got my work to do. I'm selling meals to customers, and I've got employee problems and management problems and delivery problems, and, you know, and I really just don't need some vagrant walking in here off the street." But I got to tell you, I've had that happen to me many times. I'm walking down the street, and a guy comes up to me and says, "Hey, I'm hungry. Would you give me a quarter for a cup of coffee?" And I used to give these people quarters for their cup of coffee, or I'd give them this or that or something else. But here's the bottom line. Most anybody, when you ask them, you say, "I'm hungry." During the last Great Depression, people would come up, knock on somebody's door and say, "I'm hungry. Can I hang out your wash? Can I chop your wood? Can I mow your lawn for a sandwich?" And you know, it's awful hard to tell a man that says, "I'm hungry, go to hell, I'm not going to feed you." It's unscriptural. Even God himself says you need to feed the guy. So I said, okay. This manager says, okay. He gave him a bucket, a squeegee, and a sponge. He said, "There's the water. Fill it up. Go to work. When you finish, I'll give you a meal." So this guy's name is Tim. He goes out and took him about a couple, 3 hours. I don't know how long it took, but he goes out. He washes all the windows inside and out of a Sambo's restaurant. Pretty good. About like a Denny's today. You know, they're all about the same size. Quite a few windows, quite a bit of work. A couple hours later, he comes back. He's done the job, and he's done an outstanding job. And the manager says, "That's fantastic. That is really great. I'm glad." He gave him a meal. I don't know what kind of meal it was. Probably gave him steak and eggs or whatever he wanted. And he fed him. And then he said, "Now, what do you think I'd have to pay to have those windows washed?" And Tim said, "I don't know. I haven't got any idea." And he said, "Well, we have a janitorial service, and they won't do the windows, but when we hire a window washing company to do it, they charge us $75. This is about 1960, you know, or maybe 70. It could have been 70. So they charge us $75 to wash these windows inside and out when we hire them, and our regular janitorial company won't do it. He said, "We need our windows washed about once a month. If you would come back here every month, I'll pay you $75. Now, what did he pay him? He washes all the windows. He gives him a meal. The meal's maybe worth, in those days, $3. You could buy a Kansas City strip steak dinner with baked potato for $3.50 in 1970. $3.50 in Eaton Jack London Square, for crying out loud. No, he didn't give him a $5 footlong. He gave him a meal and paid him $3.50. Now, did he take advantage of him? Not at all. They made an agreement. Remember the story of the vineyard man, and he says, "I'll pay you a penny for the day." He contracted, and they worked the day, and he gave him what he offered him. But he did a little better than that. He said, "I would pay you $75 a month to wash my windows." Now, Tim got to thinking about that offer, and he said, "That sounds pretty darn good. I worked about 2 or 3 hours, washed these windows, And this guy says he's willing to pay me $75 because there's a need and there's a shortage of people to fill it. Remember, find a need and fill it. Henry Kaiser, multi-millionaire contractor, very successful man working on Boulder Dam. All right. So Tim says, well, if I could do it there, I could probably do it everywhere. So Tim goes out, and he walks up to this guy, and he says, hey, I will wash your windows, and I'll do it for $10. So he started off with a shoe store there in Walnut Creek, and the shoe store's got one picture window, just a hole-in-the-wall shoe store. One big plate glass window, a door, and a transom over the door. Three panes of glass. One big one, one door glass, and one little glass over the top. He says, I'll do it for $10. And the guy says, you're on. Now, Tim doesn't even have a sponge, a bucket. So he asks the guy in the store, he said, have you got a bucket? And the guy says, well, no, I got some rags here, and I've got, yeah, here's a bucket, and here's some rags. And he goes out. Tim improvises. He's flat broke. The guy doesn't even have a dime to his name. So he scrounges up what he needs. He doesn't have a squeegee. He gets a bucket, and he goes out, and he washes this guy's windows in this shoe store. Probably spends an hour or so washing the windows. But when he gets done, he gets paid $10. Now he's got the money that he needs to buy a bucket, a squeegee, and a sponge, and some window washing detergent so he can actually do some work. Now he's got his equipment. Now he starts going to the businesses just up and down the street, knocking on the doors and saying, hey, listen, I'll wash your windows, and I'll do it for $10. I'll do it for $5. I'll do it for $15. I'll do it for $25. That launched this guy into one of the biggest window washing services in East Bay. When this guy got cranking over, he had 14 service trucks washing windows, making money hand over fist. And yeah, he was doing $75 a month at the Sambo's restaurant. Now, why is this guy successful? He's successful because he saw a need and he felt it. He went out and he went to work. He said, I've got a need. I'm hungry. I'm going to go out and work. Tim was a good worker. No two ways about it. Nobody argued about that. Now, oftentimes businesses are created by accident. You know, it just happened. Take Microsoft. This guy, Bill Gates, just a punk kid, quits college because he wants to work on computers and one thing and another. He went to IBM, and he said, hey, IBM, I want to make you a deal. And IBM told him to go to hell. So he went out. Now he competes with IBM, and I think he's got them snookered. I think he's beating them. Now, we all cannot be Bill Gates, but businesses get started accidentally. And every business has a need. Every business has a need. Why don't you fill that need? Find a need and fill it. See how simple that is? Now, I've been out here hiring myself a job. That's what every salesman's doing. He's really hiring himself a job. He sees a need, and he's looking for customers. And so he goes up to the customer, and he says to this customer, this potential buyer, he says, you have a need, sir. You don't know what it is, but let me explain it to you. And then when he gets through explaining the need, now let's go back and take a look at an example. I'm sitting in my office. Pat Connolly comes into my office. Remember the printer? He sees I've got invoices on my desk. He picks up an invoice. He's a printer. He sees my need. He sees that I need invoices printed. He says, how much are you paying for these? And I say, I'm paying 50 cents a piece to have those printed. And he says, what's the minimum order? I said, 500. Who's doing your printing? Icorn across the street. And he says, would you pay me cash if I did these for 25 cents each? Same 500 minimum order. I said, well, of course I would. because I'm going to save money. The salesman says, I can save you money. I can make you money. That's all an employee is doing. An employee is selling himself. He says, I can save you money. I can make you money. I can paint those dormers for you in an hour and a half. Now, you know, I'm a painter, kind of. But I couldn't paint those dormers in an hour and a half. But Jess Sears, the painter, could. And he was a salesman, and he sold his painting skills to me. All right, now you're a salesman. Everybody's a salesman. It's just that some of us are better than others. So now you need to learn the skills. Now, there are certain skills that you learn in salesman school, if there is such a thing as a salesman school. And that's one of the things that I teach here in my business school. And that is, you have to learn how to approach people and talk to them. These are called communication skills. And people buy from people they like. And you need to be a likable person. If you're not, if you're an introvert and you don't talk well with people, and it's hard, it's difficult for you to communicate, well, then we have a plan. I can teach you how to communicate with people. I can teach you how to learn how to speak to people. If you want to speak before audiences, I can teach you how to do that. See, I was just born like everybody else, and I couldn't speak. I wasn't a public speaker. I wasn't born this way. I'm fair to middling today, but I couldn't do this, you know, when I was 10 years old. So I had to learn how to do that. And there are certain techniques that somebody needs to point out to you. So when I tell you I teach a business school, I'm not whistling Dixie Thrift Straw Hat. I'm happy and satisfied with my station in life. I'm employed, and I'm going to continue to be employed. I'm a salesman, and I can sell, and I'm going to continue to sell. And I make money, and I'm going to continue to make money. And you can too. That's my point. There isn't any reason why you can't do what I do. There isn't anything in life that I do that you can't learn to do. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story here. Columbus came back from the New World, and he had a big banquet there, and they're eating and drinking and pinching the girls on the butt, and just having a good time. And some guy says, yeah, but you know what you did over there was no big deal. You know, anybody could have sailed west and discovered the New World. And they were saying that to Columbus so that he could hear it, so that they could kind of impugn him, kind of make fun of him, kind of run down his accomplishments and one thing and another. Ne'er-do-wells always do that. So Columbus looked over at this guy at the table and he said, you're probably right, sir. Anybody could have sailed west. I just happened to be the guy that did it, and it's true. I don't deny it. Anybody could have done it. He said, just like anybody can stand an egg on the small end. And he said, sir, can you stand an egg on the small end? Now, on the table, there were bowls of hard-boiled eggs. And so several guys at the table picked up an egg, and they were trying to stand it up on the small end, and it would fall over. And they'd stand it up on the small end, and it would fall over. And there was quite a little attempt there on the part of those people. And then other people at other tables were watching this, and they too picked up on it. And they said, how do you stand an egg on its small end? Now, maybe standing the egg on the big end would be easier. I don't know. I haven't tested that. But pretty soon, everybody in the banquet hall now is picking up an egg out of the bowl and trying to stand it up. And nobody was able to do that. And so finally, the guy that was the greatest protagonist and was trying to show Columbus up as being, you know, just nobody really special, He said, well, now, if you know, if you're so smart, let's see you stand an egg on the small end. After everybody now had tried it, everybody was just working their hearts out trying to stand an egg on the small end. You can try it too. It's easy to stand an egg on the small end when you know how. So Columbus took the egg and he held it up to everybody. He said, okay, watch this. And he took the egg with the small end down and with a decided thump went. And when he did that, he broke the eggshell, smashed it flat on the small end, and the egg stood upright. And the guy protested loudly, and he said, but you broke the shell. And Columbus said, well, I didn't tell you that you couldn't break the shell. I just asked you, can you stand an egg on the small end? And he said, now that I've showed you how, you can do it too. Boys and girls, that's all it takes is somebody to show you how. And that's what our business school is all about. I'm cocky enough like Jess Sears, I can paint that dormer in an hour and a half. I'm cocky enough to tell you, I can teach anybody of average intelligence how to stand an egg on the small end. I learned that from Columbus. Now, I can also teach you how to sell. I can also teach you how to go out and sell yourself a job. I do it every day. I have to. That's my business. I sell the hardest product that there is to sell in the world. I sell the Ten Commandments. Boys and girls, there isn't anybody in the world that wants to buy the Ten Commandments. None. There are no customers for the Ten Commandments. You don't see the Ten Commandments posted in the Catholic Church or in the Baptist Church or in the Mormon Church. You don't find Catholics, Protestants, and Jews practicing the Ten Commandments or the Ten Commandment model. They hate it. But there's some customers out there. And when I show that customer that the Ten Commandment model is superior to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model, it makes more money. It will save you money, and it will make you money. Then I make a few sales. Not many, but I make a few. And after all, that's all we need to do is make a few sales. We don't have to sell every cement job in the world. We just need to sell one cement job every day to feed our families. I don't have to build every house in the world. But as a carpenter, I just need to build one house a year, maybe two. And that we can do. And that's called private business. That's what we get from the Ten Commandment model. Ten Commandments are hard to sell, but not impossible. And with this Great Depression coming on, let me tell you, boys and girls, you can sell it too. First thing is, you need to understand that the Ten Commandment model is superior to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And now, you've had an opportunity to test that Ten Plank model, haven't you? How do you like it? Well, all right, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there by reminding you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.